Welcome to the Opium Den. I'm Daniel Williams. We're getting ready to call Dieter Hagenbach, a longtime personal friend of Albert Hofmann, the man who discovered LSD. Dieter is he's the founder and president of Gaia Media Foundation, and he was also the founder of a very famous bookstore called The Sphinx. And Dieter was the manager of the 2006 International LSD Symposium held in Basel, Switzerland, to honor the 100th birthday of Albert Hofmann. It was a beautiful symposium, and we're going to give Dieter a call right now and hear about his over 30-year friendship with Albert Hofmann. So let's give Dieter a call and get this going. Okay. Let's call Dieter. Here we go. I expect this to be ringing any second now. There we go. Calling Switzerland.
Hi, Daniel.
Well, good afternoon, Dieter. How are you today?
Well, still okay.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're doing okay, and I want to welcome you to the Opium Den and thank you for, again, taking the time to talk with us today. At the top of the hour, I mentioned, I gave a little biography of your accomplishments, and we wanted to talk today about your over 30-year personal friendship with Albert Hofmann. So I'd like to start off by asking you, how did you first meet Albert, and what led up to those circumstances?
Well, I met Albert Hofmann for the first time in 1975, and the reason was a small interview he gave a couple of years before, or 2 years before, to High Times, and the interview was made by my friend Michael Horowitz, and in 1975, I started my publishing company, Sphinx, and later on a magazine called Sphinx Magazine, and I definitely wanted to translate this interview and publish it in German. I looked at the interview and thought, well, that might be a good idea to get in touch with Albert Hofmann and to ask him to check the interview if everything is correct. So I called him, and he was pleased that somebody wants to publish his interview in Switzerland, but he also asked, do you think that anybody is interested in that? And I was kind of surprised and says, yes, of course, I definitely think so. And if not, it's much more my duty even to publish it. And so, because at that time, not much was published about Albert Hofmann, not like the recent years. So I finally sent him the interview, and he was very happy, me too, because he found quite a few false information and mistakes and made all the changes. And so that was the beginning of a long friendship.
This was in the late '70s that you met Albert. So you started a friendship, and how did that develop over the years? What was your relationship like with Albert? Obviously, he was quite notorious at that time for his discovery of LSD and caused a tremendous uproar not only in the United States but across the world. And how did he react to all of that notoriety? Did he Obviously, I don't think he relished it, but what was his personal feelings about all of the infamous and circumstances around his discovery?
Well, let me first start with your first question about my ongoing or starting a friendship with Albert and how it developed. It developed very nicely because by the time he invited me to visit him at his home on the Rigi Mater near Basel, which is about half an hour from my town. And I gladly accepted and for the first time met this wonderful person. And from then on, the friendship developed on various levels, privately, but also I initiated that a second book would be nice with his essays he showed me after he published LSD, My Problem Child. And he again thought, well, do you think that anybody is interested? And the essays were about his philosophy, about his also his mystic side he already developed early in his life. And I said, yes, of course. And so I published, we developed this book, and I published it in the early 80s, and it was a great success, and he was very, very pleased. And that was another step in our growing deep friendship. But at that time, as you said, LSD was demonized, was criminalized, was illegal, became illegal already, of course, in the 60s, and the mass media was really very bad. And I remember one incident with Albert. He told me about that he gave a long interview to a famous German magazine, an illustrated magazine. He even welcomed the interviewer to his home, hosted him, and asked him to stay overnight. And this guy told him, yes, LSD has changed my life, and thank you very much. And after a few weeks, the interview was published, and it was such a bummer. And this guy really condemned LSD and related it to heroin, to all the heroin deaths in the 70s at that time and 80s in Europe. And Albert was devastated, and he came to my office, and for the first time I saw him crying, because on one hand he was so nice and so gentle to this guy, and on the other hand he saw what this journalist made with the interview, and he told him everything about his sorrow child and how delicate it is and how to treat it and how to use it and to be careful and so on and so on. And we discussed about 2 hours, and he finally left and was a little bit happier then. But that was the time, and it took him years to understand that it's not LSD, it's not him, it's the culture, it's the society, it's fear, it's politics, which demonized LSD and which made LSD illegal. Because we know what LSD can be, what it can bring to an individual, to our culture. And we talk about consciousness rising, consciousness expanding. And that was at that time not something our politicians wanted, or our culture could digest.
But did that experience with the journalist cause him to pull back from the media and not to be as accessible, or did they did he get over that and continue to defend his problem child?
It made him, of course, it made him very careful about how he talked to other people, to journalists, but it was, I mentioned it because it was such a dramatic incident in his life when he talked to people. It was the first really big interview in a large illustrated magazine, and a well-known one, so almost with a print run of more than a million or almost 2 million copies, which is a lot for the German language at that time. And so it was quite a prominent exposure, and it was everything we always hated about the mass media when they mixed up with all the different psychoactive substances and made no differentiations between psychedelics, also in the words of Albert Hofmann, sacred drugs and street drugs, dangerous drugs like, or bummers on downers like heroin, cocaine, alcohol, nicotine, and so on. So it was a very dramatic situation, and I explain it because it gave me the opportunity to talk to Albert for about 3 hours about this problem and how he might continue to be very careful with journalists and giving interviews.
Now, much has been written about Albert with regards to his discovery of LSD. Not much has been written or available about Albert Hofmann as a family man. I know he had some children, and I met his wife Anita back in 2003. But how was Albert as a friend and a family man? How did he relate to his children and things of that nature?
He definitely was a family man, and with his 4 children, 2 sons and 2 daughters, he had a wonderful family life, and by the years he had grandchildren, and at the end of his life grandchildren, and I don't know how many persons or relatives his family included, but it was quite a lot, and he showed me photos with the grandchildren, and it was quite a funny and wonderful crowd with nice people. And he also put a lot of weight to see his family regularly, to invite all of them to his wonderful place near Basel, and have parties with them. And he was a lovable father and grandfather and grand-grandfather. I also met one of his grandchildren, Simon, who went into the footsteps of his grandfather and became a chemist. And on the other side, it is remarkable that none of his children has ever tried LSD. So that's something else. Without blaming these children, maybe it's because their father was treated so badly from many different sides that they thought, well, we don't want to touch this substance. So,
with regards to discovering LSD, Albert was a medical scientist at Sandoz Pharmaceuticals there in Switzerland, and initially the discovery created quite a bit of excitement, but then that excitement turned to horror as LSD was demonized. Did that cause Albert any particular problems at Sandoz? Did they regret the fact that he had created LSD, and especially created it in their company and brought some unwanted scrutiny to Sandoz? How was he treated after the discovery?
Well, he not only discovered LSD, he was a famous natural plant chemist at Sandoz, and he also, it's known that he synthesized the psilocybin and ololiqui, the vine in Sandoz in the 50s. And on the other side, he developed three prominent drugs still used and still sold by, not by Sandoz, but by Novartis, who bought Sandoz, and his medicaments, metrogin, hydrogen, and dihydrogot, they are still used, and Novartis still makes a lot of money with these three drugs developed by Albert Hofmann, all three ergot derivatives, like LSD. And LSD in the beginning was also sold as a tool for psychiatrists, but soon after, when LSD got out of control and out of the laboratories, and when, as I said, politicians and the culture saw what can be done with LSD, that it is a very potent substance for consciousness change, for expanding consciousness, and finally for changing your individual point of worldview, or having deep insights into your own soul, into your own self, and into other dimensions. It became too risky for a democracy, and so it became illegal. And soon after, Sandoz stopped producing it and selling it, and also kind of, I don't know if you know the expression, it put it under the carpet, so it kind of didn't want to be connected with LSD anymore. And that caused problems with Albert, because they never really celebrated Albert Hofmann anymore, because he was this chemist who discovered this ambivalent drug, which they first thought would be a hit, would be a good seller, but finally showed it's going to be used for purposes which, after all, turned against the pharmaceutical industries and so on. And they kind of, they never really appreciated the skill and the invention Albert Hofmann made for their benefit. So, and that was kind of, that hurt Albert, and he discussed it in various discussions that we had.
Did his ranking, did his importance diminish inside of Sandoz? Did they kind of like not really ignore him, but did they de-emphasize his work and just kind of leave him alone? Were they did they show any type of disregard or unhappiness with Albert?
Yes, that's those are the words, the expressions I was looking for. They de-emphasized with him, they kind of ignored him. And I remember, I don't know, I think it was 50 years or 60 years of LSD when Novartis at that time, or Sandoz, I don't know if it still was Sandoz or already Novartis, when they had their magazines of the company, which they gave out and to the press and to the media and to their employees, that they totally ignored the anniversary of the discovery of LSD, which after all, however it was used, was a substance who changed the world dramatically for many, many decades until now, after all. But it was a huge discovery, and it changed politics, it changed music, art, culture, society. It started the ecological movement, youth movement, the feminist movement. It was a huge discovery at that time, influencing a period, many generations. So it was strange that a company with a prominent name, that they could not afford to inform about the discovery, about the 50th anniversary of LSD. They didn't need to promote it for consciousness expanding or for tripping, for pleasure, but they could at least mention the anniversary and give Albert some credits.
Did that that saddened Albert that he was shunned by his colleagues? Why do you believe that Albert stayed with Sandoz after his notoriety and being somewhat shunned by his colleagues? Why did he stay with Sandoz, do you believe?
Well, he already had a certain age. I can't right now tell how old he was, but he must have been, he was born in 2000, in 1906. And when it came in 1966, he was 60 years old when LSD was criminalized. So he had 5 more years to stay with Sandoz to wait for his pension. So it wouldn't have made much sense to leave Sandoz 5 years before he could leave Sandoz without any bad feelings and lose his pension money, his, what do you call it in English, his rent.
Yeah, his pension, exactly.
Pension, yeah. And after all, before that, until 1966, over 14,000 papers have been written about LSD, and lots of studies and experiments, treatments, therapies, and medical applications have been made legally. And so he was still also under the impression, of course, of the usability of and the potency of LSD, and how you can use it in therapy, and in medicine, but also for meditation and lots of other fields. And so he, of course, at that time hoped that the bad times or the criminalization would be over soon.
Now, Albert was married to Anita, his wife, for, gosh, I think 70 years or so, and she passed away about a year or so before Albert did. But during and when I met them, they both seemed to have a very solid, tremendous, very happy marriage. But how did their relationship change or grow during the controversial times of LSD? How did they deal with it as a couple, as a unit?
Well, basically, Anita always stood behind Albert. She was a true wife, a true friend, and it's known that when he went to Mexico with his synthesized psilocybin to visit Maria Sabina, She came with him, and she accompanied him to various lectures all around the world. And she was always, or most of the times, she was with him when I, or in company, when we visited him or them. And it was always a pleasure to see her as well. On the other side, she, or both, weren't especially, she wasn't always totally happy to see more and more, well, let's say, hippies or alternative people visiting Alberts. And it took her, more than him, quite a few years to get acquainted with a completely different kind of people visiting him. No more the pure scientists or the straight friends, academics, but long-haired hippies, also doing some research, or people like Timothy Leary, with whom they both had a problematic time to accept him, and also to accept that LSD triggered or did opened fields which they never had thought would happen, and changed culture and society and people to an extent which they both surprised and sometimes also pleased, because a lot of interesting things were created through LSD. And by the time both, but of course especially Albert, realized that aside from the scientific, the academic, the medical, the therapeutical uses, LSD had a lot of great potency. We knew that already, to change, to create a new kind of art, or changes in music and in behavior, and so on. What basically happened through the 60s, throughout the 60s, which defines the 60s.
Well, you mentioned Timothy Leary. And when I had the opportunity to speak with Albert, I asked him about his feelings about Timothy Leary and how Leary popularized LSD in the culture, and wanted to get what Albert thought about Timothy Leary. And it seems to me that Albert's opinion kind of changed and mellowed over the years. But from your personal relationship with Albert, what were your conversations with him with regards to Timothy Leary, at least in the initial stages of the notoriety LSD was getting because of Timothy Leary?
Well, mainly our goal or our purpose, the young generation, was to explain to him the advantages of the underground movement of the 60s, and how LSD not last thanks to Timothy Leary or Allen Ginsberg, Alan Watts, Ken Kesey, John Lilly, Terence McKenna, and lots of other different kind of scientists or artists changed the world to the better, after all. And it took him quite a while to realize that, because he was still kind of under shock when his problem child was demonized and criminalized. How could that be? He always thought that LSD is a tool to help humanity to get more, for the individual to get the necessary or strongly needed insight in our times to get a better understanding of creation, of nature, of how we treat our planet. You know, issues we are now confronted with climate change. He talked about climate change, or we talked about climate change or cultural change already back in the 70s, right after the 60s and the 60s, during the 60s. We also talked about the new culture and about saving rainforests and treating Gaia, our Mother Earth, properly. That came with consciousness change, and consciousness change was at that time based with deep psychedelic experiences. So that was the back and forth, especially for Albert, as the father of LSD, to hate or to love, or to dismiss or to appreciate people like Timothy Leary and all the others. But by the time he met more and more younger people and other people who proved that LSD has qualities, for example, Stanislav Grof, Stan Grof, who up to just recently visited Albert all the time, many times, and showed the manifold uses of this most potent psychoactive substance, LSD, for treating psychotic people, but also for changing your consciousness to get insights into creational, the wonders of creation. So especially Stan Grof showed the range of the possible use of LSD.
Well, you mentioned that Al was one of the original environmentalists. And when I had the opportunity to speak with Albert and Anita, I was struck. We spoke on a number of subjects, ranging from God to the plant world and everything else. But I was struck by Albert when I asked Albert. I said, "How do you think civilization, if it's going to end, do you think it'll be a nuclear holocaust, or what do you think it will be?" And Albert looked at my wife and I, and he said that wars will always be with us, and wars will not cause the end of the earth, but we will cause the end of the earth ourselves through our destruction of the environment. So I found that very interesting, and what you're saying just adds to that Albert was one of the original environmentalists, and he seemed to be quite sad that mankind had not been able to devise a way to live in harmony with nature. So, it was very prescient of him to say that. I'd like to move into the planning and the like for the international LSD symposium that you organized there in Basel, and it was the 100th birthday celebration for Albert. Can you give us a little background as to your conversations with Albert and your other colleagues as it developed to put this symposium together?
Well, it started when it started back in 1993 when I established the Gaia Media Foundation here in Basel, and at that time, as I mentioned, I was already a close friend to Albert. We saw each other regularly. We exchanged. We had lots of conversations. And so I already at that time planned an LSD symposium. But still in 1993, it wasn't the time to stage such an international conference. And later, when I realized that Albert is going to be 99, I thought, okay, within a year is going to be 100 years. And he already, with 90 and with 95, he became kind of an internationally known figure. An old, wise man, the discoverer of LSD, more interviews came, films came, documentaries came, and I thought, well, that now it's the time to organize such a conference. And it was a great surprise for us organizers that we were welcomed wherever we went with open doors. The Congress Center in Basel was pleased to host such a conference. The Adherent Hotel, the chef, she knew Albert Hofmann and said, oh, wonderful, but just prepare a small paper informing about what the conference will be for my employees. And on the other side, I will offer a free room for Albert Hofmann during the conference. So when he is tired, he can relax and lay down. And even the international Swiss Airlines, the official Swiss airline, became the official carrier for the conference. So wherever we went, we were treated well. It was a big welcome, and nobody had any problems with the issue LSD, quite different probably 10 years, 20 years earlier. And Albert, of course, was excited that finally his discovery, his problem child, was offered, what do you call it, a stage where lots of scientists, artists, and witnesses of the time can present an overall picture, a complete, almost complete picture of what LSD was, is, and could be in science, in medicine, in the arts, and so on. And he was very pleased, and he was also very pleased with the program and with the people, the speakers we invited. And it was, of course, such a wonderful thing that Albert became 100 years old and was in best, in good health and in great spirits. And it's so you have been at the conference and you saw that this blend of this birthday of the discoverer and the presentation during 3 days was really a historic event.
It was remarkable to see so many diverse people gather in one place for one purpose. And I want to congratulate you again on doing such a wonderful job putting the conference together. I'm sure it was a labor of love, as well as for your colleagues that helped. But one thing that struck me, well, there were obviously a number of things that struck me, but the number of individuals who the early proponents and advocates of LSD were, you know, kind of old. I don't want to be disrespectful, but there were a lot of folks who had long past middle age who were involved in the very beginning of the research and the discovery and utilization of LSD, and I felt that it was a wonderful opportunity to see many of these elder LSD statesmen and a few stateswomen, I guess, gathered together and for the record, so to speak. What when you were inviting and putting the guest list together, was there anybody who did not want to come and participate?
Oh, not at all. They all were very pleased to come. We even had a long waiting list, and it was very delicate to and difficult and even embarrassing and annoying to tell a few people that we don't have any more space, that we cannot invite them. We would have loved to invite quite a few more people, all sorts of people, from the underground, from science, artists and witnesses of the time, but we already invited 80 speakers from all the different sites, as I said, scientists, artists and witnesses of the times, and to cover, to offer and to present a more or less a balanced package of information. As you say, there were lots of elder statesmen in psychedelic research. That's true. I mean, we had Sascha Schulgin. We had Ralph Metzner. Ralph Metzner was part of the Harvard studies in the early 60s with Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert, Ram Dass. And that was a period when Timothy Leary was highly respected as a psychologist and as a Harvard scientist, and then it changed. But Ralph Metzner came, and he was still studying and experiencing psychedelics for decades, after all. So that was one side, but we also had younger people. And what was very pleasant, we had lots of young people who just came as visitors, as participants, because they were interested to know what happened in the 60s. They wanted, finally, first-hand information, what happened in the 60s, in the 70s, how and why LSD was demonized and criminalized, and how a few people, artists or musicians, experienced the 60s. Like, we had these guys from London who started the psychedelic movement in England, and 2 years later at the World Psychedelic Forum we had a lot of representatives, like Mountain Girl, who was the wife of Jerry Garcia, representing the American 60s. And that was well respected and well appreciated, that we could present and made a covering the various aspects of this substance, which, when it's the smallest dosage, has great effect.
Now I know you were very pleased with the turnout in Basel in 2006, but there was also I kind of sensed in the first day that there was a little bit of panic going on, because so many people came to Basel that you were surprised and obviously very pleased, but it seemed like everybody was scrambling the that first day, just overwhelmed by the number of people that came, and I'm sure that warmed your heart. But how did Albert respond to just such a tremendous outpouring or of showing up of so many people? It obviously had to make him quite happy. But share with us his feelings on that day as over 2,000, maybe 2,500 people gathered in Basel to celebrate not only Albert's birthday, but his problem child who was turning into the prodigal son. How did Albert react to the overwhelming support?
Well, he was totally overwhelmed, but already in the years before, he became more and more he saw the good sides of his of problem child, and that people would discuss the decriminalization of LSD, and that it wasn't such an evil issue anymore. But of course, the conference showed him that, as you said, the prodigal son, or as he mentioned or expressed it, that his problem child became a wonder child or a wonder drug, or was definitely being seen as a wonder drug. And of course, he was overwhelmed by the variety of speakers who really covered every different aspect of LSD, the discovery, what it did in culture, in society, in science, and in medicine. And he was, of course, overwhelmed by that much love the people brought to him or gave him at various occasions when he was on stage. And it kind of, how do you say that in English, it triggered his joy and his happiness that at his 100th birthday, finally his problem child turned into a wonder child. And that was, as he told me, his greatest birthday present. Because
yes.
At one time, many, many, many years ago, in the very beginning of our friendship, he told me that, he explained to me that problem child, it doesn't mean in his view that it's a child causing problems, but a problematic child which just deserves more love than an average child and more care, and that you have to take care of this, of such a child, and that you need to handle this child very carefully. And when you do that, this child might become a wonder child, a very special child with special talents and skills, and be, you know, a special child for the world. And that finally happened at this conference, at the occasion of his 100th birthday. So it was a double celebration. We not only celebrated this great man, this wise man, this wonderful man, Albert Hofmann, but we also celebrated a discovery which everybody who went to this conference knew or knows the potency for changing consciousness, for, you know, changing, let me say, things for a better world. Because we, in 2006, we were, you know, already confronted with climate change, with wars, with torture, with rape, and with a world challenging our possibilities. What is mankind going to do with itself? And so it was a wonderful combination when we could celebrate also the virtues and the possibilities how to use LSD in a appropriate way.
Well, it was
an amazing
conference for me and for everyone that I spoke with. It was just so unusual to have so many people come from literally all over the world with a single purpose in mind to celebrate not only Albert Hofmann, but to celebrate LSD and how it had made important and positive changes in their life. And I'd like you to speak to one other aspect here. Albert Hofmann was 100 years old at the conference, and he participated in the opening ceremony and the closing ceremony, which we'll touch on here in a minute. But I was struck by the mental clarity that Albert had, not only when I met him in 2003, but on his 100th birthday. Did you have any conversations with Albert over the years where he believed that LSD was multidimensional in its benefits to his health, to his mental acuity? I just like you to speak briefly and let everybody know how mentally sharp Albert was right up until the very end.
Good question. But, one would maybe say that's the genes. Maybe we would be right. There is an anecdote that when people asked him why he became so old and still so alert and healthy, and then he said, for breakfast I have two raw eggs in my muesli. And then he explained, as a chemist, you know, in an egg you have everything you need, all the minerals, the vitamins, and the trace minerals, everything you need. That was one thing. And when he was visited by a friend, he asked him, "Is that true, Albert? Do you have a raw egg every morning for your health?" And he said, "No, two." That's one aspect. Another aspect, we're going back to LSD, although we already discussed that, funny-wise, we never really talked too much about the LSD, except, of course, sometimes we did all over, but we mainly talked about, as you said, about God and the world, creation, and the benefits of LSD, possible changes, needed changes, what he also claimed, that we are too materialistic and we need to find a way back to understanding nature, to love nature, to see the beauty of nature, to see the grandeur of creation, the wonders of creation, what a wonderful thing creation is. And you can see it in the smallest flower, or like William Blake said, in a grain of sand. So we also talked about various applications of LSD, and finally we came to the point what he experienced and tried and studied, and also other people, scientists, which is the low dosage, like 20 micrograms, and it's proved that small dosages like 20 microgram would enhance memory, would be good for to feel good. It's also a kind of an antidepressant, the 20 micrograms, and so that's something which might also. He didn't use it, of course, every day, but he did it, and he tried it, I think, even at his old age, something between 90 and 100, and we discussed that. But basically, I think his view of life, his love for life, and his commitment to life, and his curiosity for new things. He always wanted to know everything when we discussed everyday politics or culture. And so he was interested in everything. He was like a curious child. And I think that's an important aspect of his old age.
Well, I know that he received a lot of warm thanks and appreciations after the conference ended, and I just want to go on the record as saying that I thought it was a wonderful conference, and I think that those who are aficionados of Albert's discovery will always have very fond memories of that weekend in Basel, and I just want to take the opportunity to thank you personally and to express what I'm sure is the same sentiment of the several thousand people that attended that weekend. And just a few more minutes left here, and I appreciate you sitting down with me and for the third time, and we'll talk about that at another time. But of all your decade-long friendship with Albert, is there any one thing that you gained from your friendship, or is it just a large portrait of a number of different things that impressions and that Albert made on your life? How would you like to address that?
Ooh, difficult question. I mean, our friendship went for over 30 years, and I had so many insightful encounters with him, wonderful conversations, and lots of little insights, lots of larger, bigger insights and revelations when in a quite a normal conversation. So when a small anecdote, I hope we still have time, when we went for a walk on his territory, it wasn't a garden, it was just a piece of land where he lived, and we went for a little walk, and it was spring, and there were the new leaves of the bushes of the trees. We stood there, looked at the greens, and he said, "It's interesting, do you know, by means of photosynthesis, nature only would need one design, one form of a leaf to change the sunlight into energy. But look at nature, look at creation. It creates, no single life has the same form as the other. Like with snowflakes, there is no, there are no two same snowflakes. And when it snows, you cannot even count. There isn't not even a number to, you cannot say trillions or whatever. It's a lot more. So why does nature, you know, have such a wonderful design? To please us or what? And on the other side, you see the young people standing in the street, looking out at all the sports car, and when a special Ferrari drives by, they would stand there in awe and look at the Ferrari and say, "Oh, what a design!" So that's when we talked about the human mind and the consciousness expanding and the need to change consciousness. And of course, it all was based on our experiences with psychedelics, and known to be the agents for thousands of years with the shamans, with the medicine men, and up to now with individuals like you and me and many of our listeners now, who know that psychedelics are a tool for presently needed consciousness change. And it was also the wish of Albert Hofmann at this conference and before he died, that a new Eleusis, you know Eleusis, that was
sure.
In the old Greece, a place where special selection of politicians or people from cultures came together to take the Kikyon, which was said is an ergot, a derivative, a drink, and to gain and to go on a spiritual psychedelic journey, and to gain insights and to connect with the universe, with larger, higher dimensions. And his wish was, and Albert's wish was definitely that such sessions could happen with his discovery at this time, that interested, educated, serious people with a stable psyche, of course, can come together like they would come together for a darshan, for a meditation, and for whatever, that they can use legally in a controlled session, in a controlled set and setting, and around the psychedelics, sacred substances like LSD. And yes, to close to your, or to go, come back to your question, there were lots of insights in that direction, which I gained from my many, many, many wonderful conversations and visits with Albert Hoffman during the last over 30 years.
What do you believe is the future of LSD?
It will be with us. It'll never disappear, I don't believe. But what do you think the future holds for LSD?
It will, yes, as you said, and that was the saying of Albert Hoffman as well, it will never leave the world again. It will stay with us. And it was such a tremendous incident that LSD came to Albert Hoffman, as he said himself. It came to him and it came into the world. And when it was discovered in 1943, it was in the same year as the atom bomb was developed. And there are some people who said, well, the LSD is the antidote for the atom bomb. It was kind of the medicine for the challenge of the atomic age, which culminated in the 50s when we, for the first time in history, had the possibility to kill all of us, all humanity, with nuclear bombs. So at the same time, LSD came to finally change our consciousness. And I think that was, by the time, was understood, not only, of course, by Albert, but many of us. And I think that also with the shamanic psychedelics like psilocybin, the magic mushrooms, peyote, or nowadays, for the last couple of years, ayahuasca, there is a tremendous demand and wish and urge for changing consciousness in the individual, but of course for society, for our culture, for politics, for the needed change on this planet. We do not need to save the planet or to save the Earth. Earth or the planet saves itself. Whenever the humanity has left, there is no problem. What we need is to change ourselves, to become acquainted and to realize where we live, on what kind of wonderful planet we live, that we basically we live in paradise already now and not at any later moment. And psychedelics have always been used to gain these insights, to make the connections between the terrestrial and the extraterrestrial levels, so to understand creation and understand the laws of the universe, and finally to understand how to live on this planet and to cooperate and with nature and to take care of nature, of course, taking care of us first and become real humans. And that was always behind my conversations with Albert, that LSD, this wonder child, this wonder drug, is a useful tool to become or to gain an expanded higher consciousness.
Well, I think there are tens of millions of like-minded individuals around the world who believe that you're exactly right. A few days ago, April 19th, was the 66th anniversary of Albert taking LSD intentionally for the first time, and it's known in our circles as Bicycle Day. And just on a personal note, I'm sure you celebrated Bicycle Day and tried to commune as best you could with all that Albert had brought forth. but was there much press in the mainstream press there in Switzerland acknowledging the Bicycle Day? And more importantly to me is how did you remember Bicycle Day?
Well, no, the media doesn't really pay, put any attention to this. They would do if it would be the 50th or the 75th or the 100th birthday of or anniversary of LSD. Then it would be a top news or a top incident to report about. But or also the 100th birthday of Albert Hofmann, that was a topic to notify or to put into the media or to write something about it. But Bicycle Day was always much more, it was invented or introduced by Tom Roberts, an American scientist, who, I don't know when he initiated Bicycle Day, but it was mainly an American naming of that day for us in Europe, because at that time in 1943 there was the Second World War, and it was not something special that even a scientist like Albert Hofmann drove home on a bicycle, but for the mobile American used to have cars all the time, that was told to me. Then that was the reason. Bicycle, why did he take a bicycle? Why didn't he take a car? So at that time, in 1943, everybody had a car in America and would have driven home by car. But that was different here, when it was not really easy to buy gas at that time, and nobody really drove around with cars. And so it was mainly an American naming Bicycle Day, but of course we kind of celebrated it as well here, of course. And I remember that we especially celebrated the Bicycle Day on the 50th anniversary of LSD, when a group of people we organized a kind of Bicycle Day again, and we met at Sandoz, or where Sandoz stood, or where the laboratory stood back in the 50s. And we drove the whole way up to the home where Albert lives at that time. The house is still there. So, and then we had a nice party, and it was great. It was a wonderful day.
I'm sure it was.
And as we close out here today, I want to again express my gratitude for your patience and understanding in putting our conversation together. And it's important to me, not only on a personal level, to speak with our visionary leaders like you and others, but as I mentioned earlier, none of us are getting any younger, and we are seeing our original visionaries pass away far too quickly, and far too quickly for comfort. And I just wanted to again express my gratitude to you, Dieter. You are one of the original LSD visionaries, and you have kept the flame burning for many years, and I expect that you will keep the flame burning for many more years, and help those of us who are in the next generation and generations to come, to keep the flame burning. And again, I just want to tell you it was very humbling for me to have this opportunity, not only to speak to you today, but to enjoy your beautiful symposium back in 2006. My gratitude and love is very hard, very difficult to express, but I hope you know that it is deep and everlasting. So I'd like to give you the last word to say anything that you would like to our listeners about Albert, LSD, anything. So we'll let you finish out the hour and give us some parting wisdom.
First of all, thank you Daniel, for giving me this hour, this chance to talk about my friendship with Albert, to talk a little bit about LSD. I trust that your listeners realize that I'm Swiss and that English is not my mother tongue, and that sometimes I didn't find the right word, the right expression, but I hope that I could express my deep gratitude towards Albert Hoffman for the friendship I shared with him, for the time we could come together, the time we had wonderful conversations, and that I gained so much insight and so much happiness also from the talks I had with him, and that I finally could realize what a wonderful man he was, and after all, the role of his problem child, which now finally became a wonder drug, and it will be regarded as a wonder drug, and that was a huge change and a huge step after these 66 years now, that I think I'm very optimistic and I'm very positive, although there's still a lot to change in many mainstream minds and in the media regarding how the look on psychedelics like LSD. But I think the time is on our side and will work for us and will work for a change of consciousness in all the individuals who are aware that we are living in paradise, that creation is wonderful, and that there is so much beauty in nature, and that there is so much wonders also in our lives, that we are living in paradise, that we have to take care, and that we are, of course, that we are here to enjoy life, enjoy nature, and that means that we need to take care of our paradise surrounding it. And again, LSD, other psychedelics properly used, can be beneficial for our lives, for our expanding of our consciousness. And we didn't talk a lot about the risks, and so I will quickly add, LSD is still illegal, so I do not promote LSD. And on the other side, there is a lot on the internet about the set and setting, that you need a well-educated and experienced guide when you take it for the first time, and be careful, and it's a strong and potent psychedelic. But we will see in the future there will be much more written about these shamanic, these sacred drugs, and I'm positive and optimistic that the age of wonder drugs will come soon. Thank you very much, Daniel.
Dieter, I agree with you. I believe that the future of LSD and psychedelics is wonderful and bright. And again, Dieter Hagenbach, you are an LSD visionary and longtime friend of Albert Hoffman and everyone here inside the Opium Den. Thanks you for sharing your wisdom and thoughts with us. And in return, we all send our love to you. Thank you very much, Dieter.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Wow. That was Dieter Hagenbach, longtime friend of Albert Hoffman and the founder of the Gaia Media Foundation, and the man not solely responsible, but mostly responsible for putting together the much acclaimed 2006 LSD Symposium in Basel, Switzerland. So for all of our listeners and for Dieter, thank you very much. You've been inside the Opium Den, and I'm Daniel Williams.